have never really been a big Depeche Mode fan, but hearing that song for the first time in, I'm sure Mike can tell me exactly how many days, 151, 2, whatever, it doesn't matter. It was a long, 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 long time. Watford 1, Sunderland 0. Thank you, Tom Cleverley and the Watford boys, for finally giving us a win to finish us home game for this year on a positive. My name's John. With me is Jason.
Good evening. I'll tell you how long it is. You can tell how long it has been since we've won, because no one sang "How Poo Must You Be" when we're winning at home, because either people just forgotten or just that nervous about hanging on till the end to start singing it, because they were worried they'd jinx it.
Yeah,
it
well, there was a lot.
For that win.
Richard next to me kept jinxing it. Richard, stop saying things out loud. You stop saying that out loud. We're all thinking it. Don't say it out loud. But it was great. It all worked out. It was fine. Also joined by Adam.
Even Tim on the pitch at the end, finally a home win, he said. It's not even very, it's not very on message, is it?
Yeah, the use of "finally" by CC Penderson was a brilliant little touch. But let's talk about the game. We're going to talk about Tom Cleverley a bit later on. We're on a from the rookery end, end of season, sort of beers out with Mad Squirrel just outside. We're going to go for a curry a bit later on. We'll talk about Tom Cleverley and that announcement from this week. But Jason, that game was, as we've sort of said, it was needed, I think, mainly for a lot of the home fans, who, let's call them the average sort of going Watford fans, where they haven't seen much positivity, to finish the season and to see, well, not the best performance, was it?
No. On another day. that's a heavy home defeat. Some of it was laughable from Sunderland in terms of the chances they missed. I think there was one in the first half where a chance was put wide. We got a goal kick. The Sunderland player was begging for the linesman to give a corner, just so that he didn't look so stupid from missing from there. There was one in the second half towards the end where I think the guy fell over the ball.
We stopped it right in the middle of the box, didn't we? Yeah,
just bizarre. Some of the chances they missed. But there'll have been games where we've been on top and we didn't get the 3 points, and we would have felt that we deserved better. Adam, you mentioned Southampton, the Southampton away game, where we outplayed them for a lot of the game and we came away with an unwarranted 3-2 defeat. So, you know, yeah, you sort of you win some, you lose some, as they say.
Yeah, but it was a good win. It was because it was the last game. Adam, who, well, again, there was a lot of missed passes. There was a lot of just not quite there, but intentions were good. What do you think about the performance? What do you feel about that performance as our last home game?
I think there was a lot of, as you say, commitment and desire to win. I felt like there was an energy to win the game, which isn't always there in these. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of the game was kind of quite an end of season feel, but they clearly were up for it and wanted to win. I'd probably highlight the back three more than the attacking areas. I think Matty Pollock is always so wholehearted, and playing on the left of the back three today, very uncomfortable in that role, I would say, trying to play with his left foot, but I thought he did really well. And Wes Hoot, who was, in my view, a fair player of the season winner, thought he did well as well. So probably highlight the defensive areas. But yeah, it was a bit of an ugly watch, but we got there in the end. And a really nicely taken goal by Ryan Andrews, who wasn't perfect in that second half, but gives us that pacing behind, which he scored from, is what he's all about, right? And he gave us the winning goal, so yeah.
Because he came on the second half, Jason, and it was sort of that lovely moment. I was in the pub before the game with Ollie Wicken, and Ollie wrote a piece for the Treasury where he spoke with the Greaves family, and of course, if we take that Greaves name further back, it ends up being Skilly Williams, who of course was the goalkeeper in the very first game at Vicarage Road, and he's played for Watford before. We've talked about this before, but the fact that he got his debut, and he got not a great first. I think Mike said, I'm going to go against him. He's not here to defend us. I don't care.
Yeah, but
he sort of said on the WhatsApp group, he said, a debut to forget. And he goes, well, you're never going to forget a debut. Whatever you've got, I know it's not his debut, but it's starting debut. But that, he did nothing wrong.
No, probably not a debut to forget that was his fault.
Yeah.
It could have gone better for him if we'd have been involved in the game more, I guess, is the thing. First of all, it was a tough ask for him, having to play that sort of right wing back, right midfield position when he is a striker, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, we were sort of we started doubting ourselves, didn't we, before the game? Well, we thought he was a striker, is he?
But yeah.
There's a piece in the programme with him that says he's a striker, so he's a striker.
You can't play him out of pace, the programme tells me. Yeah.
And that's it. And the number of times we picked up the ball and he had space out on the right-hand side and we sort of chose to then sort of run inside with the ball and sort of come look. And it almost, I hate to say it, but it almost looked like the players didn't trust him to give
exactly
him the ball. And it's just... You just think, oh, come on, lads. It's
I'm over here. It's Rhea particularly.
Kept
coming inside and ignoring that open right-hand side.
And that was disappointing to see. And when he did, there was that little moment where he sort of flicked the ball over the Sunderland player's head and then went on a run sort of down the right-hand side. And that was nice to... Yeah, that you see that and you think, OK, look, he feels comfortable there. He's happy doing that. Let's give him a chance, give him the ball a bit more, and it didn't happen. At half time, saw Andrews coming on. I hadn't spotted Martins, but I think I said to you, didn't I? I said, well, I hope what happens is that Dennis goes off and we push Greaves further forward just to give him another 15 minutes, give him a chance to play further forward in a sort of more freer role than where he's got defensive responsibilities or more defensive responsibilities. But as it transpired, both came off. And Andrews was on to replace him. So I'm sure he'll get another chance. I'm sure he will. Perhaps, you never know, we might see him at Middlesbrough next week. But I'd starting debut to forget. I know what Mike means, but that I don't think he's on the player, but on the team.
No.
It's nice that Tom Cleverley's invested in him and he's worked with the younger players and he is not going to judge anyone or forget anyone on a bad 45 minutes. I agreed seeing the team before the game. I didn't think we'd set up like that. I thought it was going to be Porteous at right back again, which is what we talked about the other week, which I loved. I was quite excited for that, but that didn't happen. And I don't quite...
The only man in the world to get excited about Ryan Porteous at right back.
Yeah, that's my sad brain. But I almost don't know what the thinking was because Andrews came on at half time and was clearly fit to start. So I don't know what got on there, but I'm sure that's not going to define his, if he's going to have a Watford career or not, it won't because of that.
Because Tom did say a couple of weeks ago, he said in a press conference, he sort of said, I'm not going to give any charity debuts. And that I liked, and I liked the fact that if you did put him on, you know that he's been around the first team training for quite a while, and we know he's played before in the first team, so really great that we know that we probably feel that we're going to have to rely on those boys a bit quicker. We're outside Mouse School and it started to rain a little bit, but there's inside of the band and it would be a terrible acoustically podcast if we did that. There's always a vibe about this last home game of the season, Jason. I know it's maybe not the last time we'll see them in a Watford shirt, but sort of farewells feel a little bit there. And there was Espria, definitely, when he went off, he sort of hung around a little bit, just a bit longer and had a big wave at the end. A bit from Kone as well, but let's work Espria first. Like we've talked about the fact that money's always needed. It's not a new Watford thing, but him being the money most biggest money winner, I feel quite interesting the fact that if he is to go and if he's acting the way he is then he thinks he's going to go. I quite like the fact that is what's going to happen, because that means only one's going to go, not too many going.
Yeah, I think as we say, he's the next one off the rank, isn't he? I now know how the guys feel on the pitch when they're trying to do the half time and the sprinklers come on,
yeah,
and they get soaking because that's kind of what's happening here.
Yeah.
But anyway, with Espria, you're right. We've seen goodbyes before.
Mm-hmm.
That was a long drawn out goodbye. The substitution took ages coming off the pitch. Big wave to everyone. The lap of honour he did on his own at the end. Again, sort of big wave. Got the Young Player of the Season award. Another big wave. Didn't give so much away in his speech, but obviously he was being translated by Wes. But Wes did say, well, there's something along the lines of, I hope you continue to support me.
Right.
So maybe that's a.
We've got no idea what
I'm going
saying.
On. Yeah, yeah, that's right. He could have said something completely different.
Wes goes, why are you putting me here? I don't speak Spanish or Colombian.
It's like, yeah. Tell the bugs I'm off.
Yeah. but Adam, do you think it was the performance? Because we talked about, the three of us talked the other week about who's going to be in the Watford line, starting lineup. And it's classic things you do as a podcast where you talk about things which you think are things to talk about, but really it might be absolutely pointless to talk about. But we did talk about the fact that he isn't the full thing. He isn't the, like where João Pedro was when he left. And the performance, they sort of did the same. We saw the exciting things, we saw the thoughtful things, but it didn't quite pan out. And I suppose I worry a little bit that we might not get the money we deserve for him.
Yeah, there are glimpses there. I actually thought there were fewer glimpses today than last week. I thought he was really good against Hull, and today it wasn't quite there. Yeah, I mean, I'd be very surprised if he plays for us again after next week. I think he's the one who's going to have to go, and we're not going to get the money for him that we wish we could because of the position we're in, which is a bit of a shame.
Well, if we do, Gino, you're a genius. I think if we really do, yeah.
I think he's a really good player, and other clubs will look at him and think, actually, in our team, we can bring this guy on, and he can be very effective for us. But yeah, no way is he at the same level as João Pedro was a year ago. And for me, if there was no financial consideration, it was only sporting, he'd do another year at Watford and really try and hit double figure goal and assists and really dominate for us next year. But we're living in the real world, and I don't think if it's only him who we sell for, we said, I think maybe 10 to 15 million ish, and that was all we needed to sell this summer, then I think that's probably what we're going to have to do.
Bacone was a bit of a bigger buy as well.
I think that's just what he does, so that's his personality, right? Okay. He loves it after every week. He's rounded. I read more into Espria than Kone.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay, you did the thing with the making the love heart with his fingers. We all sort of looked around sort of each other and sort of looked across to brother-in-law and sort of he's not going anywhere, is he? We were sort of looking sort of quizzically at each other, so nah, that's not, but bless him for coming around and saying thank you to the fans.
Yeah, it was a thank you. Well, you never know with these things. I think you're saying you're right about the defence there, and like I say, Hood's performance was absolutely a play of the season performance, and the difference, I suppose, between those two, where we were discussing, you know, it was him, Livermore and Espria, but you know, defensively he has been so important, and it has actually, I suppose, you know, Tom Cleary mentioned how important the defence is, but how that has calmed down this season. We're going to do a little reflection on the season, but did you ever think in this game today, Adam, that Sunderland, you know, of course could score a goal, but weren't going to necessarily work our defence to outdo them? It takes something special.
Yeah, there were one or two chances. There was one, Jack Clark had a couple in the second half, very tame effort that Batman saved. I thought he could have done better, but Hoot just brings a calmness and assuredness to the back line. I was thinking, actually, sort of over the years that we've been in the Premier League recently and now, and I don't think we've had many better centre backs, if any. You know, if you're asking me an all-time Pozzo 11 now, I think he might be in it. Because even when we were at our best as a team, you know, the cup final team, centre-back was never a real position of strength. We've never had one who's been the dominant centre-back for a period.
Who are you pairing him with?
Probably Craig Cathcart.
I was going to say.
Right foot, left foot. There's not many others.
No.
And I think back to Britos and Prodal and players like that, I don't think Hoots. I think Hoots sort of at their level.
Mm. And he really shone this year, I think, in terms of maybe more so in leadership. Yeah, exactly. Leadership was the biggest thing he did.
It would be nice to see him back in the Premier League and having a good go. Whether that's with us, you never know, or if it ends up being with someone else, because you feel there's sort of redemption there for him. It was a real struggle for him at Southampton, wasn't it? And even in the games against him, you sort of hear their fans and what they think of him. And it would just be lovely to see. It would be a nice feel-good story for Wes to sort of, yeah, to get back in the Premier League and put in some good performances. And
don't say
hopefully,
too loudly,
but yeah, hopefully he does it with us. But,
I don't think he comes to Match Grill after games to hear what we're saying. Ken played a good chunk of the game, came out from injury. Seemed to be really not as wide as I wanted him to when Dennis was on the pitch. But again, like, I'm just looking at it, I think, for green shoots or something to help.
Yeah, I mean, he's clearly a player that's come back from injury, as we know. You can see that in what he was doing. Maybe half a yard of pace, not there. There are a couple of times where he's got the ball down the left-hand side, gone to beat his man, not able to do it, whereas normal Ken, you know he'd be able to do it. He'd be able to beat his man, get round him, just use his strength to get round him, as we've spoken about. That one in the first half where he sort of kicked and ran into the player and probably could have got a foul but made rather a bit too much of it, and I think that made the referee's mind up for him. And again, you kind of feel if he was fully fit and thought he could do that, he would have beaten the player. He'd have played the ball in front of him, he'd have got past him, got the cross in. But I think he needs a pre-season now again, I think, just to get back to the Ken we know and love.
Well, still love him.
Still love him. And of course, if we cleverly sticks with the three at the back and the wing backs, as I've said before in the podcast, I think that left wing back role's made for him. I'm delighted to see him starting there next season.
Satisfied, Adam?
Yeah. I think, sorry, to go back to Ken. He's an interesting one.
don't say sorry about going back to Ken. The more we talk about Ken Summer, the better.
Ken Summer podcast. He might be an interesting one because he's been at Watford a long time now, and this could be an opportunity if he wanted to move on and, you know, play elsewhere. This could be a summer for him to do it, or it's the time for him to maybe sign a new deal or knuckle down and go again. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with him this summer. But yeah, overall satisfied and quite intrigued as to what the next few weeks will bring.
Yeah, I think he probably does actually fit quite nicely with Tom and the experience they've had together and that promotion they had together in that side. So yeah, there's a lot more to him, I think, with Tom as the head coach.
I think Ken and Dan Backman are the only two left from the cup final team. I saw a tweet or something this week. I think they're the final two. Someone might be able to correct me on that.
Yeah. Many of that team didn't do very well in the final. Anyway, but finally it happened to Watford. Yeah, I'm not going to get a recording contract. So let's catch up with the other guys and we'll have a chat about this appointment and how everyone's feeling about Big T Cleves being the new Watford head coach. We're now in. We've left the Mad School, and Jason and I and Adam are drier than we were outside the Mad School. And we're now in the Spice Lounge, and we're just waiting for our order for our curry, end of season curry. Joined by Geordie.
Hello.
And also the Brigadier, or what's the new
sheriff.
Thing?
I'm a sheriff now.
See, I think the new part where you've been mauled by a bear, and it was quite harrowing, the picture you sent us, Colin, your makeup.
Harrowing for you, surely more harrowing for me.
Yeah, maybe. But I think sheriff is a lower rank than a brigadier, and I don't think I can lower your rank.
I don't know. If you're a sheriff in Montana, in Mizona County, I mean, you're the man, right? You're the boss. Brigadier, you're just part of a kind of establishment organisation.
Okay. Well, we'll get into that for next season. And Kieran's here.
Hello.
Now, I want to talk, boys, mainly. We've discussed the game, but Mr. T. Clev, Thomas Cleverley. I'd like to know if I knew his middle name, but I don't. But T. Clev, Thomas, he'd be announced this week, and it was, I don't know, Geordie, like the fact that it was him, someone who we met many years ago when he was 20 years old. Were you happy with it? Were you emotional about the appointment?
Yeah, he was a manager I'd heard of, which is a rare thing for Watford. So yeah, I think we need to be realistic as to what we want to achieve in the next 3 years, and probably a young manager coming into a role is probably where we are. We need to build over the next 3 years to get to a point where if we did challenge promotion, we had a chance of staying up. And he needs to cut his teeth as a manager. So it makes sense, rather than getting someone in for 2/3 of a season and then sacking them when we're mid-table, we might as well be building, treat next season and the season after as a journey rather than a standalone season that we judge. So yeah, I'm happy for. I think he knows Watford. Post match,
you sound like a crazy man, Geordie, talking about season two, season three. What the hell are you talking about? There's a Gino Pozzo in charge. But it's probably that the last bit you said, like the whole point about him being someone who knows the club, a club man. Do you think that is going to be an advantage?
I think in the same way a youth player has an advantage. They get forgiven for mistakes they might make on the pitch. People want them to do well. Everyone wants the Watford manager to do well if you're a Watford fan. But you have a particular fondness for Tom. Like you said, he came as a youngster. He spent most of his career with us. and he's our manager, and he gets it, and he wants to do well. So it's symbiotic. He wants to do well for himself. He's probably got bigger ambitions than managing Watford if it works out for him.
Hopefully.
And hopefully, you know, he takes us and leads us on a journey. He's a bit like Asprilla, João Pedro. These players who came in and grew with us and then moved on. Hopefully, when he leaves us, it'll be because he's taken us as far as he can.
But Colin, you did hear Tom's interview on Talk Sport, and then I always think with Tom, when I've heard him speak when he was a player, he felt Manchester United media team trained. What did you get from hearing him speak in that on Talk Sport?
So you're talking about Thomas William Cleverley.
William, that's it.
Yeah. Bill.
Yeah,
Bill. Billy. Billy Clev. I was quite impressed with him because firstly, he was quite open and honest about the fact that he felt that he hadn't been as ambitious as a player as he might have been. Like, he had moments in his career where maybe he could have jumped one way, but he didn't. Or he didn't push himself in quite the same way. He was quite comfortable with his ability, and he didn't really, you know, watched other players around him at United, maybe, and Everton, who were really pushing themselves to improve. And he was like, I'm quite happy with the way I play. But, you know, played for England 17 times, you know. But then he was saying, but I'm much more ambitious as a coach. And he was also, he stated that he was passionate about our club. And I know that you often get new coaches who kiss the badge and say, I've always been a Watford fan. He was like, no, you haven't. But he has played more games for Watford than any other, than all other clubs combined. So his connection with us is strong. And I've always thought of him as someone very quiet, very quietly spoken, a little bit sort of diffident maybe, and not necessarily a leader of men. But in this interview on Talk Sport, I think it was the Breakfast Show, with Alan Brazil and Ali McCoist, I thought he came over really well. Like, he was on it. I want this. We're going to get a home win this weekend. We're going to get our first home win. He was kind of cute about recruitment in the summer, because obviously he doesn't really know. But yeah, I came away thinking, okay, he's actually serious about this job. He's serious about being a coach. It's not like, oh, here's another thing in my life that I can do and, you know, make a few quid. I've really felt that there was a level of commitment there. We'll never ever forget the winner against Arsenal, where he ghosted into the box and smashed it in from 12 yards. I think the club loves him quite possibly as much as he loves the club. And we have to take him at his word, and he sounded sincere. He's not the sort of bloke. I think he's a pretty straightforward sort of chap, and I don't think he would make stuff up. So when he was saying that I feel passionate about this club and I really want to be ambitious as a coach, I was like, yeah, no, I believe you. And I've heard other managers who get jobs and you're like, yeah, really? Or is this just a stepping stone for you? Or do you really? So I feel like we've got someone who wants to do well for himself and for us and for the players. And he also said that he didn't think there was any player who he couldn't improve. That's quite a grand statement. But he also went on to say, in, I think, a written interview, that when he'd come in back to the club and was one of the senior pros, that there were lots of young players at the club and he wanted to help them and guide them, and things that he maybe didn't have because the culture was different when he was young. So yeah, all in all, I think, you know, who else is going to make us feel this positive? Whether he can get us into the playoffs, I mean, who knows? That does, to some extent, depend on who leaves and who comes in, because we are struggling to score goals, and we need someone that can score goals. But I sort of came away from that interview thinking, yeah, there's a mind, there's an intelligence, there's a desire, and there's a passion and an ambition. So, yeah, why not?
Why not, indeed? Kieran, because that's my big thing is, I listened to the WD18. They did almost an instant reaction to it the day of it all happening. And I sort of had this feeling with it is of wanting to sort of go. And I sort of agree with Sam, because Sam was like really like, well, it doesn't bloody matter because Junior Pozzo. And I'm sorry, Sam, I'm paraphrasing you heavily here. But, you know, he absolutely was just not excited about this because the situation, not because of Tom, not because of the emotional connection with him, not because the goal he scored against Arsenal in the last minute and that great win, but he really felt you can't get emotionally excited about it because of Gino Pozzo still being our manager.
Which is a fair point, because we know that managers don't last very long at our football club, but I think ultimately at some point things need to change, because the last few years it hasn't worked. And I think what I found really interesting was Tom Cleverley obviously came onto the pitch after the game today against Sunderland and addressed the crowd that had remained, and he, you know, following on from what Colin was saying with the interview he did with TalkSport, you know, one of the things that he said to the crowd today was, we want to, during pre-season, we want to regroup and then we want to reconnect with the supporters, which I thought was really interesting, because when was the last manager that we really felt a positive connection with? And from a personal perspective, I'd say it was probably Javi Garcia. I think he got it. There might be, for some, it might be you have to go back further than that.
Well, I've had a link with Rob Edwards, not for anything particular with me, but actually that was more down to the fact that I went to a Junior Hornets event and I saw him interact with children in the very limited time he was with us, and how he interacted with them and how he just act on that day, like, you know, like somebody get feeling like they get it, but that didn't connect with an entire fan base. That's quite a hard thing to do.
Yeah, and that's absolutely fair. And I still, you know, we know what Rob has gone on to do, and I'm still disappointed with how that one ended. I guess what I think is interesting is that Tom Cleverley has been in this environment at the club for quite some time, and he's clearly seen something in terms of, when he's using that term reconnect, he clearly sees that there is some form of disconnection. And I think, you know, I think fans have been pretty patient over the course of this season. We were very much backing Valerian Ismail until it got to a point where you could see that it sort of had stopped working. I think first half of the season, very much on his side. We'd seen that there were changes, we'd seen that there was discipline brought into the club, there was accountability, but clearly for some reason, whatever that is, it fell away towards the end of the campaign. So look, I think he spoke really positively after the game. I think also what was really interesting was he said, I want a team that shows desire, and I want them to play for the badge, and I want them to have the things that Graham Taylor would have been proud of. So he was saying all the right things. He knows the importance of this football club to the community. He knows how important it is to the fans. And look, I completely back him. I think, look, he's young. And it's interesting, isn't it? Like, it almost feels he played 15 games for Leicester, I think, on loan before he came to Watford. Yeah. But I think Watford was probably his first full season as a professional, given that opportunity. And he's come full circle because he's now been given his first opportunity as a manager.
Yeah, he got Player of the Year that year, didn't he? Did Colin?
Yeah, just he also said that it was going to be an absolutely brutal pre-season because he wants to play a pressing game. You know, and they, in order to play a pressing game, you have to have fit players who can work together, lots of like little triggers so that they press. And so I think the players must have, when they heard that, they must have slightly shuddered at the thought of running around Caspery Park, you know, and being timed and being made to do it again if they don't get in the time. So we might even take them to the Lake District on a camping trip. Let's hope so. Ken Furphy will be proud. But yeah, I think he means business.
Yeah, because Jordy, the big question, I think, where Sam was going with what I saw him was, how long does he get? I thought there's two how long does he get, and I'm going to ask you one. How long do you think he gets with the fans? Because Val felt like, you know, Kieran's what he said, Val got a little bit longer with the fans because we saw him sort them out and the discipline. That was quite a big thing for the last few years of the misfits and the, was there discipline there? How long do you think, because of his longevity with the club, how long do you reckon the fans would give him?
I think it depends. If he wins his home games and loses away games, it's better than vice versa, because most fans, the majority of fans, are at home games. So if you win on the road but lose at home, as we've been, or not win at home, it creates discomfort, dissent, and it erodes. Football fans live in the moment. I think it's evident the way the players left the pitch today that some are not expecting to be here next season. Recruitment's going to be massive because Cole's talked about how Tom wants to play. Buy players that fit that mould. Buy players like him. Young players who've got something to prove, who want to move up, who don't need to be perfect in year one. If we can build something and people can see that there is an end goal, I think they're going to be more forgiving. If we start bringing in journeymen, or the game's boring and we're losing games, then the patience will erode, because as much as we want him to do well, if he's not doing well, there's only so much patience people got, and the most impatient of all sits opposite the dugout.
Well, that is the big question. Because Colin, what was the stat you said? How many points, how many games has he done?
He's had 8 games in charge, 2 wins, 5 draws, 1 loss. That's 11 points from 8 games. If he gets 11 points from the first 8 games, he's in borderline trouble.
With who?
Well, just in terms of, is this going to be... are they going to renew, you know, like they did with Val, they're going to renew his contract after 10 games, say, we believe in you, even though they sacked him 6 months later. But he's kind of... I agree with you, Geordie. I think the home form is massive for the kind of reputation of a coach. You can lose games away from home and people go, well, it's tough. Going to Hull is a tough place. Going to Preston is tough. Deepdale, the history, whatever. You know, but you've got to win at home. And this season, we've been absolutely abject at home. But we had a nice run. Ollie and I went to a few northern climbs, ate some curry and watched our team, you know, win. Often in the last minute with, you know, big goals in the last 10 minutes. So that's fine. But it doesn't quite land with, as you say, the majority of fans who watch at home. So he's got to get that right. But I also think that the idea that we're going to play some sort of... So here's an example, Ipswich. So Ipswich have come up from League One and they look like there's a good chance that they're going to get promoted, either automatically or through the playoffs. And how do they play? They play a kind of collective form of football where they press together, defend together, attack together. They're a group. They're a championship side. In fact, they're a League One side because mostly it's the same players. But they play this cohesive style of football. They're not trying to play out from the back and tiki-taka and play a kind of sophisticated version of championship version of Premier League football. They play a recognisable championship style of football, which is very effective, again, particularly against teams that are going, well, we like to play like this sophisticated Pep style of football. So maybe that's what he's going to go for with us. He's going to say, we're a championship team, we'd like to get promoted. The way we're going to do it is we're going to be a cohesive unit, we're going to press hard, we're going to be fitter than other clubs, and we're going to score our goals just through overwhelming the opposition and defending as a team as well. So if he can get the recruitment right, some of the players that are currently at the club won't fit into that system. They won't fit, so they might leave. But it's very hard to predict right now what's going to happen, because recruitment at Watford has been so difficult to call. Each summer we don't know. Like, there's some kid coming in from somewhere that everyone thinks is great. Yeah. And then he gets sent out on loan.
Yeah.
So you just don't know. You don't know what's going to happen. But I just... currently, and I am quite an optimistic person, I sort of feel like he can manage up well because he knows the club and he has the respect of the club because of what he's done for us and also what he did elsewhere. So, and he can certainly manage down, because players in that dressing room, young players, will look at a player who's played 70 times for England, played for Man United, was trained in the under Fergie in the academy. They're not going to say, well, what does this guy know? And he knows. And he said, I know what a winning mentality looks like because I grew up in it. And it was unacceptable to draw, let alone lose. Yeah. So I know what that looks like. I know how that feels. I know how to create it. That's what I'm going for. So, I mean, if he's even 70% as good as his word, will improve, I think.
You mentioned before, he said he thinks he can improve any player. He's had 8 games. I think it's 2 wins, 5 draws and 1 defeat. 5 draws, if you improve every player, becomes 7 wins and 1 defeat. And suddenly you're running away with the title.
Yeah.
If you get the recruitment right, if you get the players buying into it, you get the rub of the green, etc. If you don't, those 5 draws very easily, and we saw today, we saw the game against Hull, there were chances missed by our opponents. Draws can easily turn into defeats. And it goes from being 2 wins, 5 draws and 1 defeat as a kind of an average, suddenly you start losing 4 of those games. And
which is kind of what happened to Val. He suddenly wins were turning into draws and draws were turning into losses. Yeah. And that's like, we can't accept that. There was a moment, wasn't there, in this season, John, where we were all a bit like, ooh, are we getting sucked into this? Yeah, are we going to get sucked into this? You know, are we going to be the team that they go, there's always one team that falls in, especially with teams at the bottom of the league improving. It hasn't happened. The win against Birmingham, I would say, was the moment where you go, okay, we're going to be okay.
Yeah, and that's the clever thing. Sorry, that all the things that we've seen with the Pozzos in terms of changing players and the managers, should say, and all that. The fact that it felt like after the Huddersfield game, which I think was a further 2-3 games that Val had, but the fact they went, no, now is the time, because that's the last game that we could potentially get 3 points from, and that would be enough. We are going to make that change right now.
it feels a little bit like they lucked out a little bit that they can make that change with Tom Cleverley, because he was around the building. Actually, Tom's nearby. He'll be quite good. But it did seem to make sense that they're going to do it. But how long... I think we're happy to give him a bit more time than we gave Val, even though the great thing that Val did with discipline. But Gino's not going to change, is he?
Probably not, no.
How long is he going to get?
Well, I don't know. I mean, what did Val get? He got to, February, March, didn't he? I'd like to see Tom given a season. I just think that we need a bit of stability. I'd like to see him given time.
So Colin just put two fingers up there. He wasn't swearing at you. But that thing of like wanting him to get a season, that's what you want him to get in the with your massive Pozzo thought process on.
Yeah.
But actually, how many seasons do you think would be best for him?
Oh God! I mean, you know, I want him to be successful, and if he's successful, he'll be here for a long time, hopefully. But obviously, as the guy said already, he's ambitious. He said in his interview on TalkSport he wasn't as ambitious as a player as he would have liked to have been, and I think he'd like to make up for that with being a manager. And if he's successful with us, might not be that we're sacking him if he's doing badly. It could be that he's leaving or being poached because he's doing really well. So I would like to see him for as long as possible. I think he's in an interesting position because what we've seen in the past is when managers have come in halfway through a season or after a coach has been sacked, they're inheriting a team of players that they don't know. The difference here is that Tom inherited a group of players that he did know, some of which he'd even played with, and he mentioned in the TalkSport interview when Gabby Agbonlahor asked him how did it feel or how was it when players were calling you Klebs, the then Gaffer. Yeah. He said, well, I actually had an advantage because I already had their respect, they already knew who I was. He's going into a different position now because in pre-season any player that's coming in, he's not going to know, and they're not going to, some of those players might not even know much about him because he has no managerial background. Yeah. So he's in an interesting position. He almost had an advantage coming in because he knew the players that he was working with. He's now in a position where recruitment, as the guy said, is really key, and he's got a job to try and get to know those players, earn their respect that he's already said he has from the current players, and then see how he can move those forward and improve them. I really, really want him to succeed. Probably more than I have done any manager in a while, because he knows the club. He knows, as I said, he spoke really well after the game today. Really gets what it means to the fans and the community. And for me, if he can succeed, then you know we could be back up where we want to be. But it's going to be hard. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens.
Where we want to be? What, 10th?
to that point, there's a strange paradox with Watford and the Championship of being too good too quick.
Yeah.
So if Tom comes in, gets us from 15th to 14th to 13th to 12th to 11th to 10th to Collins Holy Land, and we see progress, it'll be a good season. If he comes out the blocks and is like 2nd, 3rd, 4th, and then we start getting back to where we need to be, which is, you know, 8th, 9th, towards 10th, Gino might turn around and go, well, hold on a second, if I get someone else in, I might be able to make the playoffs. Because the ambition or the expectations change. If at the moment our expectations are hopefully that he starts doing a good job. If he comes out too quickly, then people start thinking we're going to go up, and there's a danger that he can be too good too quick, and that then just changes the narrative around it and the feeling in the moment that Gino has to make a decision. So hopefully it is a continual ascent, not a sudden descent that then require puts us back to square one again.
I think that's right. You look at Leicester this season, they were 30 points clear, they were geniuses, the manager was a genius. Suddenly they were 1 point clear and everyone's questioning the coach, questioning the method, the idea as it's known at Leicester. And they have got promoted, but they've done it in a kind of circuitous route, having looked like they were going to be promoted by the end of February. Suddenly they were panicking. So I think there's some truth in that. I think no one's going to coach a team and think, well, we don't want to be in the top four yet. No. You can't do that. You just try to win every game. I mean, that's what coaches always say. And it's a bit of an old cliche, like we take one game at a time. But of course they take one game at a time. What else can they do? They can't play the game three games down the road before they played the first two games. So of course they take one game at a time. But as fans, we're like, well, if we win this game and then we're going away to so-and-so and they're bottom of the league, we'll get that one win and then we'll win that one and then, you know, suddenly we'll be third. And it's like, but coaches and players just can't think that way, and they don't.
No.
So we'll see. I want to hear from Jace.
Jace?
Hello. I'm still here.
You are. You and Adam are still here, but we've been chatting about it. You know, is there anything particularly you
from what the boys have said about Tom?
I mean, they pretty much covered it all, haven't they? There's, like they say, we've heard from him today, and he's making all the right noises, isn't he? We're hearing from him what we want to hear. But it's almost like we talked about in the sort of last week's pod. It's not just him, is it? He needs a lot of support from above and from below. The players need to be on the same sheet as him, and I think they will be, because Colin was talking about his experience as a player. I think there's something to be said for having a younger coach, probably closer to the players than some of the old school managers that we've had in the recent past, where we've got some old boys in
50 plus
and
years,
that,
yeah.
Exactly, a massive difference between when they played the game and the players of today. But ultimately, he needs that support from above. And if he's talking about the way he wants to play and getting the right kind of players in for that, then that absolutely needs to happen. And that, for the last X number of years, insert your own number here, has not been happening. And you've just got to hope what is going to be different that means that that's going to change. We've just got to hope that it does.
Adam, we've talked a lot about things. So the question for you is, did you enjoy curry?
Loved my curry. lovely evening. Not to worry too much about next season yet. We'll get back together in June and we'll stress over it.
So we'll see what happens with Tom and this next pre-season. Who comes, who goes, and blah, blah, blah. It's not worth worrying too much about. But, you know, well, there's still one more game to go. Middlesbrough away, and we'll have a chat about that. And a review of the last few months, and since last August, the best moments. Is there such a thing we can make? Who knows? We'll have a podcast next week. So thank you very much for listening. As we come to the end of our 14th season of being From the Rookery End, thank you to everyone for being part of the podcast, and well, we'll be back again next week. Come on, you horns.